CJ, Chris Johnson joins us on the line right now. Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Hey, Chris, I know you're a big Tragically Hip guy, big Gord Downie guy, and it's a sad day for really Canadians as a whole, but specifically people who were super into the Hip, as I know you were. Do you have any Gord thoughts, Hip thoughts you want to share with us?
Man, it's tough to add to what's already out there, to be honest. I mean, this one hits a little bit closer to home for me because my mom died a little less than 2 years ago from glioblastoma, the same type of brain cancer that Gord had. And while she was getting treated at the hospital in Kingston, we actually saw Gord Downie there just a couple of years back. So, you know, it's kind of an eerie connection for our family and you know, something that, you know, was quite upsetting when we heard that he had that same type of cancer. And, you know, probably my fondest memory will be one of those shows in Toronto that I was at on their farewell tour at the Air Canada Centre. Just a special night being there with my wife and our friends. And, you know, at least in this case, you're always left with good memories when someone you know dies. And in Gord's case, he's left us with a lot of music and things to I think, bring smiles to everyone's faces, too.
Yeah, what it is amazing. I mean, the catalog is incredible, and we've been playing Hip songs all day. Do you have any expectations, like what we could see tonight at the Air Canada Centre? I know there's going to be a moment of silence, but like hockey is such a big part of Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip. What do you think they'll do tonight?
Well, I know as of this morning, at least, we're talking about some kind of tribute, maybe beyond the moment of silence, and you know, I'm not sure where they've landed on that, but I would expect there'll be some sort of acknowledgement, and I think that there'll be a little extra emotion in the building, frankly, just because this is something that I think hits close to home for a lot of people. And you know, in the Leafs dressing room today, in the Detroit Red Wings dressing room, there's only Hip being played. I've seen some tweets from around the NHL expressing a similar thing there. And you know, because of the hockey being Canadian and Gord being Canadian and sort of the way all that mixes up, you know, I would think that it'll actually be a pretty special night at the rink tonight, you know, whatever the Leafs choose to do.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm happy that I'm not happy this day happened, but it's good that the day did happen where, you know, you do have teams that are at home and that you'll be able to celebrate as Canadians kind of under one roof. That was what was so great about that farewell tour. And, you know, Ben and I also went to one of the stops and we got to have our own experience with that too. But that, yeah, there is a sense of community with stuff like that. And when people are grieving, that they can get together, that there is a place where they can all appreciate things at the same time. And that, I think that it should be a little bit of a special night at the Air Canada Centre.
It should, you know, and I kind of feel like, you know, I really feel for his family. I mean, 53 is far too young for someone to die. And you know, I know he leaves behind kids and you know, people that knew him more intimately than, you know, it feels like a lot of Canadians almost feel like they know Gord, even if they never met him or only shook his hand at a concert one time. But I feel like there's some happiness in a day like this because, you know, having seen what that disease can be like when my mom dealt with it, it's not very pleasant. And, you know, I'm sure on some degree, there was some suffering with Gord. You know, he really showed a lot of courage, I think, in the way he handled his diagnosis and advocated for, you know, the causes that are close to him, even with his illness. And, you know, I think that we should, those of us that maybe aren't feeling the loss on a personal level, like his family might be, should try to think of all the positive this man did for our country and all the great things he's left us with. And, you know, how much he would have liked to just be at a hockey game tonight, too, and being sharing and sort of the emotions of a big moment in the country. And that's, you know, that's what today is.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, that final concert, 11 million plus across the country watching, it was a big moment. And just about everybody shared it.
And even if you weren't a fan of the music, I think that's a great point, is that you can relate to it. And I think that everyone, it was so public that in this country, it at least is an example of strength and courage in the face of adversity and something that's as daunting as terrifying as that disease.
Right. And who can imagine it? I mean, you never know how you would handle it yourself in those circumstances. I mean, from the outside, we're talking about a guy who had the whole world, right? He was, mm-hmm. you know, he's made lots of money. He's famous. He's traveled. He's met incredible people. He's done amazing things. He's an artist who's, you know, left a legacy that, that will stretch generations. And then, you know, he was still in the prime of his life. I mean, and so, you know, I think that, that some, you just don't know how you'd react. And I think that, you know, I'm not sure if it's how much has been talked about, but that there's something to be said for the way that, that he approached this. And, you know, the interview he did with Peter Mandrich stands out, where clearly he was struggling. You know, he had to write things down, and you know, that's what happens with brain cancer. You lose your brain function and don't have the memory all the time or the words that you're looking for to express the emotions. And for someone like Gord, that would never be a problem, given how great of a songwriter and poet he was. So, you know, I'm almost struggling for the right words to describe him, but he's really shown, I think, a way, a real dignity, I guess, in the way he dealt with his disease. And you know, I'm going to remember today, you know, him fondly and think of all the positive moments he's brought to the lives of my friends and I when we were camping as kids, listening to his music or drinking beer at a cottage, or, you know, even now if I go for a jog, sometimes I'll throw on the hip and, you know, have him in my ears. I'm trying to get a little sweat on. So, you know, he's touched everyone, I think, in a lot of different ways. Whether you're a big fan like I am and like you guys are, or you know, maybe the younger generation that isn't as familiar with the music.
Yeah, I think, yeah, a lot of youngsters maybe got into it in the last couple of years while all this was happening, and yeah, found the Hips catalog. But yeah, an emotional day for everybody, and yeah, it'll be extra emotion in the Air Canada Center tonight, Maple Leafs and Red Wings. There's no correct way to transition out of that, but let's talk a little bit about some hockey. Leafs win yesterday 2-0 in Washington in a manner they have, that was the first time they've won that way this season, shutting out an opponent and scoring only two goals. I guess we should be impressed by that. Like, it could have easily been 5-0 in the first 10 minutes of that hockey game, Chris.
That was an impressive win, I would say. I mean, there's a couple things that stood out to me. I mean, for one, you know, I was at the game and so talking to the players and around, and man, you just feel a change in this team just with a game like that. I mean, obviously they beat some good teams last year, but there's almost a bit more of a surprise about it, where this is feeling businesslike. And you know, the expectations we talk about externally are mirrored internally, and that the Leafs, you know, are starting to really see themselves and believe that they're one of the best teams in the league. And they went into Washington, and I thought they played a great game. It was a good start. They didn't get too discouraged by missing on some pretty golden opportunities early in that game. And you know, in a lot of ways, I think their depth won out. You know, Washington has some injuries. They've lost a couple players because of salary cap issues over the summer since the Leafs had last played them in the playoffs. And the Leafs were able to roll out three lines that were stronger as a whole than Washington's. And, you know, Connor Brown, and you know, after his promotion from the fourth line, you know, ultimately gets the goal that decides the game. So, you know, there's a lot to like there. I think Freddie Anderson's performance is encouraging after, you know, he felt he was the victim of some bad bounces early in the year, but certainly his numbers in the first few games weren't where he's had them over, you know, a pretty long career now, or a decent size career. And you know, the Leafs just kind of keep rolling on now with 5 of 6 wins. And we're still, I think, trying to get a sense of the order of things, you know, what's real and what's not in terms of what teams have started out strongly or poorly. But it's clear to me that the Leafs have the stuff, you know, already to be considered one of the better teams in this league.
Yeah, and it's a great point you made about the depth, because it really did feel like that's how the Leafs won out. They just ended up still continuously having wave after wave after wave. And that was one of my takeaways from that game is, yes, it's early and we are starting to get impressions of certain teams, and we do feel good about the Leafs. And you're not there's no one panicking about the Capitals, and they'll be fine. They'll win a bunch of regular season games. They've got a great line. They've got a great goaltender. They'll get Niskanen back at some point. But it was a reminder of, you lose Schmidt, Alzner, Shattenkirk, Mojo, Williams, that it feels a little bit like, well, first of all, you can't sustain losses like that and still be the same team or look even close to what you were last year. And it felt a little bit like teams trending in different directions, and maybe that the Capitals' window has closed.
Well, there's ships passing in the night. I mean, and it's partly the salary cap, honestly. I mean, it's not that they didn't want to keep Johansson or Williams or some of those guys, but you know, you just can't do it. And the Leafs are still in a stage where they're building. They're scaling up. I mean, since they lost that game 6 at ACC in April, they've added Patrick Marleau, who scored 500 goals in this league, and really all they've lost essentially is their bottom pair in Matt Hunwick and Roman Polak. And, you know, we'll see, maybe Polak will even stick around if he ends up getting a contract with the Leafs. But, you know, the Leafs haven't had to shed anything, and they're adding to it, and their players are at a point in their careers where there's an expectation they'll be getting better. Whereas Nicholas Backstrom and Ovechkin they're at a high level, but they're not at a point, I think, that anyone could think that they're going to be better than what they have been for this last decade. So the teams are definitely trending in different directions. I have serious concerns about the Caps in terms of viewing them as a contender, just because they're already in a salary cap conundrum right now. If you look on Cap Friendly, they've got, you know, less than $5,000 right now, I believe, under the cap ceiling. And you know, they have Matt Niskanen out on injured reserve. I mean, they just don't have an ability that I can see to add much to their lineup because of the cap and the way that they're constructed. And you know, we've seen time and again with them that they just don't quite have enough with that group to win a championship. So, you know, it very much felt to me, and some of this is narrative based, but that Washington's kind of slowly sliding from, you know, pretty high levels after winning the President's Trophy the last 2 years, and the Leafs are just on the ascent. And, you know, I don't think that anyone can say for sure how good they're going to be this year. I mean, we can't rule out that they're going to be great, that they're going to be challenging themselves maybe for President's Trophy. I don't think it's beyond the realm of our imagination that's the case when you see, you know, the way they've been able to play so far. And it's just such a benefit to be able to spread around their lineup because of that depth. I mean, Backstrom played 24 minutes last night, and the Leafs were able to roll the lines, and, you know, especially in a situation where they have to play again tonight. I mean, I just think they're so well suited to you know, weathering kind of the ups and downs, the natural ebbs and flows of a season. And, you know, they're definitely on the rise.
Well, and speaking of spreading around that depth, Connor Brown ends up getting the game-winning goal, and that line looked at least a little bit more responsible defensively. They didn't seem to get hemmed in a whole bunch in that game. And, yeah, Babcock's line juggling ends up working. Do you think that this could be a really long-term line that these guys end up sticking together? And then if that's the case, what do you end up doing long-term with Mitch Marner?
Well, I think there's still more juggling possibilities. I mean, maybe Leo Komarov doesn't stay on the line with Kadri and Marleau long term. I mean, I've kind of been of the opinion that we're going to see an injury or two that dictates, you know, how these things change and evolve. If we're imagining while they're healthy, it's hard to say. I mean, they still have depth beyond what's playing in the lineup. But I would be comfortable with Josh Leivo playing regular minutes for this team, or even Kasperi Kapanen. And those guys right now are facing a pretty steep climb to get into the lineup to find a place on this team. I don't imagine Mitch Marner will be a fourth liner for too long. I mean, he just has too much skill in my eyes. And the good thing is he still gets to play on the Leafs' most dangerous power play unit. So, you know, he's going to have his opportunities to get points and flash that skill and his ability and vision. But, you know, it's just a numbers issue right now. I think it's a great problem to have. It's a bit of a contrived controversy, so to speak, you know, having Mitch down there, because the one thing we're seeing with that fourth line is they're actually putting up pretty good results. And then they were with Connor Brown as well against the fourth lines they're playing. I mean, the Leafs just have an abundance of talent at that position. And, you know, it's makes scoring look easy at times. I mean, it wasn't easy last night, but they still had all kinds of chances that went unconverted, you know, in that game. And, you know, it's, you know, if injuries don't become an issue where the lines get set, you know, I think that you might still see Babcock potentially play with the Kadri line. Certainly the Bozak line is a candidate to move up, and, you know, really everything but the Matthews, Hyman, Nylander trio at this point, I think is possible that you'll see some changes.
Yeah, the depth is so ridiculous that they lose a guy like Brandon Leipzig, who has 4 assists in his 6 games with the Knights, the Golden Knights. It's ridiculous. And all those guys down at the AHL level, they can't crack this roster.
The only thing I'll say about it not feeling super contrived as an issue of Marner down that line is, as I was saying earlier to you though, Ben, is Marner's not exactly a trigger man. He's a guy who works so well at getting the puck and possessing it, but then creating plays and setting guys up. Like, he should have had an assist last night where JVR, I guess, just didn't see the puck because he just missed it by that, what, like a half foot? And having him play with the likes of, and again, I don't expect this to happen for so long, but every time you have him out there with the guys he's skating with, and now it's Eric Fair drawing in even less skill than having Dominic Moore out there with him. It just feels like you're wasting the opportunity to have guys who can put away the opportunities he give you.
I'll give you that. But look, I mean, there's no comfort in Mike Babcock's world. And you know, all of this, on some of it is the numbers, some of it's psychological. You know, I think that there's a message being sent here to Mitch Marner and a challenge sort of being issued. And, you know, I thought he played pretty well last night in his shifts at 5-on-5. And, yes, he doesn't have the line mates to put up crazy point numbers, most likely. But, you know, it's not just about the points for Mike Babcock. I think it's how his commitment in the defensive end and how he's playing all over the ice. And you know, this is just a chance to give him a little poke. I mean, let's not forget that William Nylander spent some time as a fourth liner last year. It was brief, yeah. Only a couple games. And then he eventually finds his way to Austin Matthews' wing, and those two are dynamic. And you almost have this feeling they're going to play together forever. I mean, I'm sure that won't be the case. But, you know, they appear now to be as set in stone as you have. But there's going to be opportunities still for Mitch Marner. And you know, he has not looked quite right in this season yet. And, you know, this is a chance for him, I think, to handle this as best he can, the way Connor Brown did. You know, he just kept going to work and finding ways to make an impact on the game. And lo and behold, he's now, you know, got a better opportunity to contribute.
Are you one of those tinfoil hat truthers about Marner that, yeah, like since the hit against the Blue Jackets last year and then the mono in the offseason, that, yeah, he's not the same guy?
Or how about this one? Maybe just Lou being like, we're going to have to pay Austin and Willie too much. This guy's throwing a little bit of a gate. Put him down on the fourth line. Drive the points down. We got to pay him a little less.
No, I'm not buying into that truth, Sarah, because yeah. Honestly, if you wanted to bury someone, I think you'd want to bury Nylander at this point, because he has looked more dynamic in general. He's got a great shot, and you know, you wouldn't want him playing with Austin if you're worried about what might happen to his point total. And look, they had a chance to extend him this summer and weren't able to do so. And you know, now they're facing, I think, the possibility of him, you know, cashing in much bigger than you would have thought. So, you know, I my sense all along with the Leafs has been they're pretty happy to pay these guys what they're worth when the time comes. I do think in Mitch's case that, you know, having that injury, having mono, you know, possibly has limited him somewhat physically. But, you know, we'll see. He's still a young guy, and I think he's got a very bright future ahead.
All right. So everybody thinks it makes the most sense to move Marner into Leo Komarov's spot, right, on that line with Marleau and Kadri. And that's why I don't think it'll happen. Mike Babcock seems so dead set in just going counter to whatever the popular belief is, because he coaches the team, remember, and you write the stories, CJ. But, like, doesn't that make just plain sense to do that immediately? But I just, for that reason, I have a tough time seeing it happening.
Well, except that, you know, I think Komarov is a much better defensive player than Marner at this stage, and he is trying to give that line difficult assignments. And you know, I think that it benefits the Leafs to have balance in their lineup. I think it's great that we can just argue about this. I mean, yeah. The fact they have four lines as good as they do, like if the fourth line scores tonight at 5-on-5 and Marner goes and gets a goal, we won't be surprised. And we won't be surprised if Matthews has a big game or Kadri has a big game or Bozak and JVR score two power play goals. I mean, if you're the Red Wings or whoever you're facing on a given night, there's not an easy way to match up against this team. And you know, I think that we should embrace the strength that they do have too many good players, because look, at 2 years from now, we're going to be looking at this and going, oh man, they're losing this guy. They're losing this guy. They're losing this guy. It's going to be exactly what Washington's gone through. And that's nowhere near as good, because then you're plugging in guys that probably they don't deserve to be where they're at. And you're just hoping you can tread water.
Yeah. Like Juice. That was a tough one for him yesterday. And yeah, poor Josh Levo, because at least he was getting attention before being in the press box, and now Mitch Marner's taken all of his shine. So you've done great on Hockey Night in Canada, first of all. You've been terrific.
Thanks, boys.
Yep, it has been fun. Headlines is the best. And you mentioned that they might scrap the All-Star game and have an event in Europe, and I'm wondering what that event might look like.
Not entirely clear. And look, that's still in the brainstorming stage. But, you know, what I can say is that we're going to see a lot more, I think, in terms of European and international things going on in the league. And then there's this understanding, I believe, between the league and the players that they have to come up with a better plan. I mean, this is them getting back together and talking about these issues for the first time, really, in the last few weeks here since the Olympic decision was made, which was obviously an issue that drove them apart. And, you know, I think that they really are going to turn their attention to trying to expand, you know, the amount of money they can make over there. So, you know, the All-Star Game is an event that has limited upside, I think, at this point. They've tried, you know, various formats. We kind of all know what it is. It can be good at its best. And certainly John Scott at least added something interesting in Nashville a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But it's not great. And maybe if they even just hold an All-Star Game in Europe, that might give them more impact, you know, taking it somewhere where you can expose the best players in the league to a new audience. You know, maybe find a way to get some more revenue and sponsorship opportunities in a country in countries where they don't have as many. And, you know, we'll see how this develops. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk here recently, and I think that there's going to be much more as they look to sort of hammer out a bigger plan and more of a way to grow the game overseas.
Happy to be joined now by a Fox Sports Detroit, Trevor Thompson. Hey, Trevor.
How's it going today, guys?
Very well. So, yeah, what's the deal here? I thought the Red Wings were tanking. Apparently, they don't want to do that.
Maybe some other teams thought the Red Wings were tanking, too, and didn't bring their A game out of the gate, only to find out they're playing some pretty good hockey so far this season.
Yeah, also, it just dawned on Ben and I. Jimmy Howard is 33 years old. How is that possible?
He looks like he's 23 right now, and he's reinvented himself over the last couple of seasons. And he just seems a lot more calm, a lot more poised in the net. He's stopping shots that used to go in, especially that five hole. He seems to have solved that problem that he had earlier in his career. And he just looks like a completely different goaltender. And right now, the numbers say one of the best in the game.
Yeah, so is that the main reason for the hot start for the Red Wings? Because, again, as Ben mentioned, most people were projecting the Red Wings to be in the cellar this year. And, again, it's very early and much can still happen. And I think they're still likely headed for closer to the bottom than they are the top. But has it mostly just been Jimmy Howard, or what are you noticing has been so successful early for this team?
Well, to your point, it's going to be a tough season for them, and they like to say it inside the room, the coaching staff, the front office. Every night's a playoff game for this team. They can't afford to give up points. They've got to collect points every night, and they're going to be in a dogfight to get in the end, and they know that. But they've got a good start out of the gate, and Jimmy Howard has been a big reason why, but certainly the offense has been there for them as well. Henrik Zetterberg, talk about a guy looking 10 years younger than his number. Here's a guy who's 37 looking 27 at the top of his game. In this league that's built on speed right now, he's not the fastest guy out there, yet when he is on the ice, somehow finds a way to control the pace of play, somehow finds a way to set guys up. He's had Gretzky-like assists so far this year, the way that he sees the ice. And that's been a big benefit for guys like Anthony Mantha, who's lit the lamp early for this team offensively, and Mike Green's having a great start to his season, and Marty Furk has gotten off to a good start, seeing some power play time, and he's been set up for a couple of goals too. So the offense has helped them along, but certainly their last line of defense, Jimmy Howard, has been a really big reason as to why they've been able to get off to this good start.
Future Toronto Maple Leaf, Mike Green.
I was just going to say, Trevor, because a lot of Leaf fans are looking at the pending free agent right-handed shot, Mike Green, and his 9 points in six games played, and thinking, ooh, you know, the Leafs have had a little bit of a defense issue. That guy could fit in nicely. Maybe he's not the all-world defender, but whatever. You can take the 9 points. You can take that type of point production if you're a Toronto Maple Leaf, but it maybe is a tougher sell to sell at the deadline if the Red Wings keep this up.
It's a tougher sell at the deadline. You're certainly not going to try to sell him to your competition if you're within a handful of points of the Leafs at the deadline. Is that a guy you want to give to them down the stretch? I don't think so. It's not always who you get, but who you keep guys from getting as well. So Mike Green is certainly going to be a big part of what this team does offensively. He's got some jump in his legs earlier. He's in a contract year. Guys are certainly going to raise their game at that point. And if they can benefit, if the Red Wings can benefit from Mike Green raising his game and winding back the clock, so to speak, for himself, that's really going to bode well for them in the long run.
We weren't sure as we were heading into break. Ben and I were discussing whether Mike Babcock is still a thing in Detroit.
I don't think so. I think we've moved on from Mike Babcock being a thing in Detroit. I think that every time they play the Leafs, they're going to want to beat them. And there's a lot of respect in this city for what Mike Babcock did for the Red Wings organization, for the type of coach Mike Babcock is, arguably the best in the game right now. What he's done for Team Canada hasn't gone unnoticed. Mike Babcock has all the respect that a person can have, a coach can have in his position here in Detroit and throughout the league. But certainly the team has moved on. The philosophy has moved on. They've moved on player-wise. They're trying to keep up in this new league, trying to get younger, trying to get faster, and looking for ways to still be dynamic in those areas that they used to be and still make the playoffs I guess in a sort of a way, rebuilding in a lot of ways. So there are a lot of challenges there, and they're moving ahead with Jeff Blass as the head coach and his philosophies. Certainly he learned a lot and owes a lot to Mike Babcock for where he is in the game today, but they've moved on from the Babcock era here for sure.
Yeah, and now they're thinking about winning the Stanley Cup because they beat the favorites for the Cup. They beat the Vegas Golden Knights in Vegas, their first loss of the season. Like, nobody does that, beats the Vegas Golden Knights, except for this Red Wings team did somehow.
That was a pretty good game, too, a very good hockey game. And until Marc-Andre Fleury took Anthony Mantha's knee to the head, he was on top of his game. He didn't look like the same goalie after that point in the game. And the Wings certainly ran up the score in the third on them. But that was a very entertaining hockey game. And the Golden Knights, a very entertaining team. They've made me a fan. I don't know about you guys, but they've turned me into a fan.
Yeah.
No, Ben thinks they're too good too soon.
Yeah, I don't like that part. I'm not a big fan of that because, yes.
This isn't like underdogs. It's like front runner. This is a big
I think Leaf fans look at the 50-plus years without a Stanley Cup, and yeah, they look at the Vegas Golden Knights maybe, you know, making the playoffs in their first year of existence. Maybe a tougher sell. But, yes, it's a great story so far. No question about it. Trevor, thanks for doing this, and enjoy the game tonight.
Cheers, pal.
Guys, it's been my pleasure, and you enjoy it as well.